You can get it out of it and put it right back in there. No, I'm not talking racism. I'm not talking police. They used to take a black woman who would be pregnant and tie her up by her toes, let her be hanging head down. And while the baby, they would take a knife and cut her stomach open, let that black unborn child fall out, and then stomp his head in the ground. They only got a few minutes left, but I'm trying to go fast. I'm kind of tired, so I can't go too fast, so you have to excuse me. But I want to get the rest of this out. They used to take a black woman who would be pregnant and tie her up by her toes, let her be hanging head down. And while the baby, they would take a knife and cut her stomach open, let that black unborn child fall out, and then stomp his head in the ground. I show you books where they write about this. I name them to you. Slave Trade by Spears. From Slavery to Freedom by Pope Franklin. Negro Family in the USA. Frazier touches on some of it all night long. Anti-slavery by Dwight Lowell, the man. Like the books all night long, where they rank themselves on what they did to you and me, and got nerve to say, we teach hate because we're talking about what they did. While they're lucky. Really, they're lucky. They're fortunate. Slaves used to sing that song about, my Lord gonna move this wicked curse and raise up a righteous nation that would obey. They knew what they were talking about. They were talking about the man. They used to sing the song, Good News, the Chariot is coming. If you notice, everything they sang, those spirituals were talking about, gonna get away from here. None of them wanted to stay here. Only one of you, the one sitting around here now, like a not on the Lord, want to stay here. You're supposed to be educated in this. You're supposed to know what's happening, you know. They're not supposed to know what's happening, but everything they sang, every song, had a hint in it that they weren't satisfied here, that they weren't being treated right, that somebody had to go. The slave maker knew that he couldn't make these people slaves until he first made them dumb. And one of the best ways to make a man dumb is take his tongue, take his language. Even a man who can't talk, what do they call him? A dummy. Once your language is gone, you are a dummy. You can't communicate with people who are your relatives. You can never have access to information from your family. You just can't communicate. So, and also if you notice, the natural tongue that one speaks is referred to as one's mother tongue. Mother tongue, and the natural intelligence that a person has before he goes to school is called mother wit. Not father wit, it's called mother wit because everything a child knows before it gets to school, it learns from its mother, not its father. And if it never goes to school, whatever native intelligence it has, it got it primarily from its mother, not its father. So it's called mother wit. And the mother is also the one who teaches the child how to speak its language. So that natural tongue is called mother tongue. Whenever you find the same people as we, who aren't able to speak any mother tongue, well, that's evidence right there. Something was done to our mother. Something had to have happened to her. And they had laws in those days that made it mandatory for a child to be taken, for a black child, to be taken from his mother as fast as that child was born. The mother never had a chance to rear it. Child would be brought up somewhere else, away from the mother, so that the mother couldn't teach the child what she knew about herself, about her past, about its heritage. It would have to grow up in complete darkness, knowing nothing about the land where it came from, or the people that it came from, not even about its own mother. There was no relationship between the black child and its mother. It was against the law. And if the master would ever find any of those children who had any knowledge of this mother tongue, that child was put to death. They had to stamp out the language. They did it scientifically. They found any one of them that was speaking, off on its head, or they would put it to death. They would kill it in front of the other, in front of the mother, if necessary. This is history. This is how they took your language. You didn't lose it. It didn't evaporate. They took it with a scientific process because they knew they had to take it to make you dumb, or into the dummy that you and I now are. I read in some books where it said that some of the slave mothers would try and be tricky in order to keep their child, who'd be off in another field somewhere. They themselves would be praying, and they'd pray in a loud voice and in their own language. And the child in the distant field would hear his mother's voice, and he'd learn how to pray the same way. And in learning how to pray, he'd pick up on some of the language. And the master found that this was being done, and immediately he stepped up his efforts to kill all the little children that were benefiting from this. And so it became against the law, even for the slave to be caught praying in his tongue if he knew it. It was against the law. You've heard some of the people say they had to pray with their head in the bucket. Well, they weren't praying to the Jesus that they're praying to now. Then the white man lets you call on that Jesus all day long. But he'll make it possible for you to call on him. But you will call him on somebody else, eh? That he had more fear of. And in your calling on that somebody else in that other language, that caused him a bit of fear, a bit of fright. They used to have to steal away and pray. All those songs that the slaves taught or sang and called spiritual had wrapped up in it some of what was happening to them. And when the child realized it couldn't hear its mother pray anymore, the slaves would then come up with a song, "I wish I couldn't hear nobody's prayer," or the song, "Motherless Child, Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child." Father gone, mother gone, motherless child sees a hard time. All of these songs were describing what was happening to us then in the only way the slaves knew how to communicate, in song. They didn't dare say it outright, so they put it in song. They pretended that they were singing about Moses in the land, "Go Down Moses." They weren't talking about Moses and tell old Pharaoh to let my people go. They were trying to talk, some kind of talk to each other over the slave master's head. Now you got a hold of the thing and you believing in it for real. You really, yes, I hear you singing "Go Down to Moses," and you still talking about Moses 4,000 years ago. You out of your mind. But those slaves had a whole lot of sense. Everything they sang was designed toward freedom, designed toward going back home, or designed toward getting this big white ink off their back. For 300 years, we stayed in that level. We stayed at that level. Finally, we got to where we had no language, no history, no name. The white man named us after himself. Jones, Smith, Johnson, Bunch, and names like those. We couldn't speak our own language. We had none. And he then began to teach us that we came from a jungle, where the people had no language. This is the crime that he committed. He convinced us that our people back home were savages, animals in the jungle. And the reason we couldn't talk was because we never had a language. And we grew up thinking that we never had one. And in the meantime, while he was working on us, his brother in England, and in France, and in Belgium, and in Spain, and in Italy, and in Germany, was working on the African continent. While he was working on us over here, they were running wild on the African continent, storming out all signs that ever there was a civilization over there, making slaves out of them over there too. And by working together as partners, the man on the European continent, he in cahoots with this white man on the American continent, succeeded in taking over Africa and Asia and the entire world while we went to sleep. And then in 1865, he came up with a trick pretending that he was fighting the Civil War to set us free. But he wasn't to set us free. He came up with another trick that he was issuing an Emancipation Proclamation to set us free, which it wasn't to set us free. And then he came up also pretending that he was putting some amendments to the Constitution to set us free, which it wasn't to set us free. And then later on he came up with a Supreme Court decision which he said was to give us free access to better education, which it wasn't to do that. And then last year he came up with a bill that he called also to give us more freedom, which it also wasn't to do that. Any man who will know the level of civilization that we started out on and came from, any man who knows the criminal deeds that were done to us by his people to bring us to the level that he's been on for the past 300 years is so deceptive, so deceitful, so criminally deceitful that it is almost beyond his nature or desire to come up with anything meaningful that will undo what has been done to us over the past 300 years. It is absolutely necessary. Anything that is done for us has to be done by us. Now, brothers and sisters, it's after 10 o'clock, and I definitely didn't intend to go beyond 10. But I do want you to have at least a 10-minute question period before we dismiss and prepare for our next week. Meeting for our meeting next week. It's necessary tonight to go back somewhat and remind ourselves, because many of you know everything that I've said tonight. You know it already. Then there are many others who don't. But I felt it absolutely necessary to use tonight, since we're getting ready to go into February and Negro History Week, to use tonight to kind of brush up on some of the history of our people preceding that existed prior to the time we were brought to America. And then next week, next Sunday night, deal with current conditions and the tricky scheme that is used by the government as well as other forces to perpetuate our condition rather than alleviate it. And then on the third Sunday, the 31st of January, it's our intention to present to you the program and the solution of the Organization of Afro-American Unity, which we feel will bring about some meaningful results immediately, and which we will ask your 100% cooperation in order to make it materialize. Before we have our question period, we're going to take up a collection. And I want to ask you, especially tonight, please be more generous than you have been, because if there's anything we need, it's finance. We don't get any help from any outside source. Anybody else would get it. We don't get any help whatsoever other than what we get right here at these meetings from you. So I would ask you to, and also this week, we want to take out an ad in one of the local newspapers so that it will be known that we're out here next week. None of the newspapers ever talk about our meeting. They don't help us publicize it in any way, shape, or form other than the militant does. But some of the Negro newspapers don't. I don't know whether they won't, but I do know that they don't. And I would like for you to try and dig down as deep as you can and help us, because we need it. The fact that we could get stronger financial support, we would be in a position to make our program materialize much faster than we have.